The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well in this October 23rd, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Lots to get to on the show today. Lots of college football to talk about. We've got Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 going to be joining us coming up in just a little bit. Yes, Georgia is on a bye week, but need to talk about how they did what not many people said they could do a week ago, right? As they are coming off of one of, if not the biggest win of the year when they went and took down the number one team in the country, Texas, 30-15. So we'll talk to Jordan Hill about that, what the Dogs can do in the bye week and what they have coming up the rest of the way. And we also have Daryl Dappert's Double D. That's right, Locked On Auburn's Daryl Dappert will be joining us at 3:15 from 3:45, or I guess from 3:15 to 3:45. And we'll have 30 minutes with Daryl to try and figure out what the heck's going on in Auburn football. I don't know. I mean, at this point, who does know, right? And if there's anybody that's going to hop on the radio and tell you like it is, it's going to be Daryl Dappert. So we're going to talk to him about all that coming up later in the show. Plus, we'll talk a little Auburn basketball as well as we get closer and closer to the start of that season and a lot of other stuff with Daryl coming up later in the program. Outside of those two guests, though, you can be a part of the show. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot me a text in the on-the-line text box. That number, 334-784-1067. And as we always do on a Wednesday afternoon, we begin to flip the page, right? We begin to look forward to what's happening this weekend in college football. And Christian said this yesterday on our way out of the show yesterday, and it seems to be in college football this year, every single weekend has just been really, really good. I mean, I can't remember as we enter week 9 of college football, I can't remember a single weekend where we came out of it on a Monday and we were like, eh, it was all right. Eh, you know, it's kind of boring. It was all right. I mean, there was a couple good games, but there wasn't anything overly crazy. I can't remember a week like that yet. Through 8 weeks of college football, they've all been exciting. They've all been good. Even week 0 had some fireworks, right? And so you should expect nothing less this coming weekend in college football. And just to remind everybody, the first official college football playoff rankings come out 2 weeks from yesterday, November 5th, on Election Day. They come out on November 5th, the first rankings. And I'm really curious on what they're going to look like and how they're going to treat this thing, because people keep trying to have these conversations right now in college football, like, oh yeah, this team, they're a playoff team, right? Army's a playoff team, or Indiana's a playoff team, or, you know, Ole Miss still has a chance. Frankly, we don't know. We don't know who's going to make the college football playoff, because sure, while they have requirements and they have quote-unquote guidelines that they're going to follow because they've been so good at following rules in the past, we still don't know with the at-large bids, the ones that have to be handpicked, the ones that are not written in stone, right, the conference championship winners of the Power Four, we don't know what the playoff committee is going to do. And so, is Alabama truly eliminated from the playoff? I don't know. Is Vanderbilt alive in the college football playoff? I don't know. And neither do you. And neither does anybody. And for year one of this new-looking playoff, that's really frustrating to me. Because we don't know what to predict. We don't know how to predict it. And maybe that's how they want it. I don't know. They want to build up the drama so you have to tune in and watch their selection show that they're going to draw out for 3 hours and make you watch all of it. I don't know. But what I do know is there are a lot of teams that I would still consider alive in the college football playoff race. I told T-Bone this the other day. Kirk Herbstreit going into the weekend, he said there were 30 teams by his count that still have a chance, that still were alive in the college football playoff. And I think when you start looking just at what the AP poll shows us, that number has since dwindled and will continue to do so. Right? You work your way up from the bottom. I start with Vanderbilt, who is a top 25 team that, yes, they have a loss to Georgia State, but they also have a win over the number one team in the country at the time, whether you think they were or not. They also have a chance to beat the number five team in the country and the number eight team in the country and the number seven team in the country. If Vanderbilt wins their games, they're in. How could you not? Now, I don't think they do. I think they trip up somewhere. But as of right now, I put Vandy in. How about Army-Navy? How about 6-1 SMU? How about 6-1 Missouri or 6-1 Illinois? They're all still alive, are they not? Pittsburgh, nobody's talking about them. They're undefeated. ACC, not great, but they're undefeated. What about Ole Miss, right? We talk about that team quite often here. A team that Auburn is going to miss out on this year. Are they done at 5-2? Seems like it. People have written them off, right? People have said, they're done. Now, Ole Miss, you lost too many early. You're done. But are they? We don't know. I'm not going to go through all of these, but the ones I do want to highlight, Alabama. Christian and I talked about this yesterday. Alabama fans are losing their minds. They don't know what to do. They've lost two out of the last three. They're in uncharted waters. They don't know what to do with themselves. And I think for them, it's not over. I don't think they're done. I don't think they're done losing, is what I mean. They've got another loss on that schedule. Home versus Missouri, which their leading rusher's out this weekend, so Bama will probably take care of business. At LSU, Mercer, at Oklahoma, and home for the Iron Bowl. I'm telling you right now, I will claim it on this Wednesday, October 23rd. As long as both teams are healthy, right? As long as Garrett Nussmeier doesn't go down or something crazy happen, I will claim it right now today, a week and a half before. No, even longer. They have a bye week before that game. Doesn't matter. November 9th in Baton Rouge, LSU is winning that game. LSU is going to beat Alabama and fully eliminate them from a college football playoff. Now, I know I've joked a lot on this show about you could have a Bama team that has five losses that could somehow find their way into the college football playoff. And there will be discussions of that if they have three or four losses. There will still be somebody that makes an argument for it because we know what it's all about. But a three-loss Bama team would actually be done. In real conversation here, they would be out. They would be done. And I still think even if they win out, they're still stressing on selection day. I do. I really do believe that. And so they've got some business to take care of, but I don't think they can do it. Other teams that are near the top but still trying to figure it out, right? Other than that, I mean, Boise State alive. Kansas State's alive. A&M's alive, Indiana, Notre Dame, BYU. Like, you're starting to talk about all these teams that still have a legitimate chance. Isn't that crazy to you? Isn't that wild to think about? For the first time in a long time, we have this many teams still alive, and that number will continue to drop. It will continue to get smaller, right? And there are a lot of predictions out there right now about undefeated teams in action this weekend that could go down. Undefeated teams that, let's be real, have to be undefeated, which I don't think is fair, but fair's in August. Syracuse at Pitt this weekend. That's a Thursday night game. That's coming up tomorrow. I didn't even know they played on Thursday. So Pitt, I think, could be in trouble. You have Navy, who plays Notre Dame. They could be in trouble. Indiana plays Washington. They could be in trouble. Oregon plays Illinois. They could be in trouble. BYU is a road underdog, the number 11 ranked team in the country, a road underdog at Gus Malzahn's UCF squad, who's 3-4. So Vegas is already telling you that BYU's in trouble. Miami plays Florida State. They're fine. Penn State's on the road at Wisconsin. Think about that. What happens if all those undefeateds lose? Then we got to reset again. Then we got to reset and say, ah, crap. Now what do we do? Now who's in? Now what is the mark that we compare all the other teams to? Because that's what you have to have. There has to be a standard in the college football playoff that then every other team gets compared to. That's how it works. Right? There's one team, typically, that is the gold standard of the year. It's like, okay, here's what this team has done. Now let's see what everybody else has done in comparison to that, and then we'll start comparing them with one another. But man, I said this a couple of weeks ago, and it's still relevant. Is there a top dog? Is there a gold standard in college football right now? I think the only team that could make a legitimate case are the Oregon Ducks. I think that's it. Now, I personally believe that Georgia is one of the best teams in college football, but they've got to make up some ground even after beating Texas. I think they still have to convince some people, which is wild to me. Wild to me. I would love to see if there's a hypothetical betting line of Georgia and Oregon right now on neutral site. Give me Georgia. Give me Kirby Smart. Because I think the Dogs would win that game. But they have a loss. So you have to hold that against them, right? Penn State, they're frauds. They are. I firmly believe that Penn State does not have what it takes. Miami, same way. They should have two losses, if not three, in my opinion. Iowa State, BYU, Indiana, I don't know. We don't know yet. Pittsburgh's the same way. Give them credit for being undefeated. Heck, Army and Navy are undefeated. But are you going to put any of those teams as the, quote, standard of the college football season this year? No. Nobody's willing to take that risk yet. Do you see what the problem is here? It's so wide open, and there are so many questions to be answered. And the fear that I have, folks, is we're not going to have the answers we're looking for. It's not going to be cleared up as much as we think it is come the final decision, the final rankings, the final bracket of the college football playoff. And Rhys Davis has done his best when ESPN talks about it, whether it's College Game Day or whatever. He's done his best to explain this and stress this to people that the final college football playoff rankings and the final college football playoff bracket will be two different things. They will not correlate perfectly. You will have a seventh-ranked team as the fourth-seeded team. Does that make sense? Because of the Power Four automatic buys. It will look different, and there will be people that will raise all sorts of you-know-what. They will be all up in arms. They'll be confused. And it's okay. It's the first year. But there will be some confusion. But I'm not even worried about that. My fear is we get down to it, and in this 12-team playoff, we've got 20 teams that you can make an argument for. And it's going to be Florida State, Alabama, all over again, this time on a much bigger scale. On a much bigger scale in terms of quantity, and a much bigger scale in terms of quality. Because that was one, I guess, one scenario. That's two teams. One's in, one's out. And they moved on. They didn't care. They didn't care to leave Florida State out. They did it with a smile on their face because they saw their bank account number go up. What are you going to tell? And they told, and they sat back and they told Florida State it was because your quarterback got hurt. What are you going to tell the eight teams that miss out this year that, again, will probably have the resume to compare to others? What are you going to tell them? What are you going to tell those schools that don't make it because you wanted this other team to get in or you thought this other team should get in? That's my concern here. And I fear that we're going to have more than just one case like we did for Florida State, that we could have several by the year's end. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone lines before going to break. You're on the line. Who am I speaking with?
Dan in Auburn.
What's going on, Dan?
Not much. I disagree with you on your thought there. I think if you're the number 12 team or whatever, and you barely get in, or if you're not, and you just barely missed out, you can be upset that you didn't make it. But it's not like you were one of the top four or five guaranteed best teams in the whole league, you know, with no losses or one loss or whatever. All those teams will get in. You're talking about a team that's going to have two or three losses that might get left out. I mean, you know what? Play better next year. You know, I just, you know, you can gripe, but you have 12 opportunities to get in. You know what? You just got to find your way into one of those 12.
Sure. And I get that. I it's very easy to say, hey, just play better, because I'm with you on that. Win your games. You don't have to worry about it, right, Dan? You win your games, you ain't got to worry about it. But I think we can all agree, when you look around college football this season, it's harder to win on any given Saturday than it's ever been in the history of the sport. And I have a feeling, given how this has played out, you're going to have several teams in that pocket of two or three losses that are still really, really good football teams.
Yeah, but you can be a really, really good football team and not make the playoffs. It's not a guarantee. Yeah. You know, you got to win the games that matter. You know, I mean, I think the one thing that's going to correct is that, all right, so you take your top teams in the conference that get the bye, but if they're really not the best four teams, you know, say it's somebody coming from the, you know, the Big 12 or wherever, you know, they're going to end up playing a really, really good team in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And so your top four teams will more than likely be the best four teams when it comes down to the end.
Well, let me say this, because I just found somebody that they put out like a bracket if it were today, right? If the season were to have ended Saturday night for college football, this is what the current bracket would be. Oregon would be one out of the Big Ten, Georgia two out of the SEC, Miami three out of the ACC, and Iowa State four out of the Big 12. Do you think those are the four best teams in college football? I'm genuinely asking.
Well, obviously number three and four would definitely be very questionable to me.
Sure.
But they're not going to make it past the first round.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, yeah, okay, Miami.
I'm sorry, not the first round. They might not make it out of the first round, but they're definitely not going to make it out of the second round.
Right. I mean, Miami would play either Ohio State or BYU. Iowa State would play either Penn State or Boise State. And those are all really good matchups, I think.
Yeah. I mean, look, and if they beat those teams, well, then they deserve to be there.
Sure.
You know, I just think you allow it to actually be solved on the field way more. And if, like I said, if you're one of those few teams, you know, that had a really good year, you know, you won, you know, 10 games, but you have two really bad losses, you know, and you didn't play enough good teams, you know, then you got to know, hey, we got to schedule harder or better, or we got to come through in the games that matter.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I think it's way better than it was. No matter, you know, is it perfect? Probably not, but it is way better than it was, I think.
Yeah, well, I give you credit. Yeah, appreciate the call, and I always appreciate the pushback. 334-321-1390. I want to speak to that because he brings up something there with the expanded playoff, and I'm going to read the rest of this bracket because, God, the matchups could be insane. He brings up something there with college football with the new formats that allows it to be different in a certain way that you could even see become even more in years to come. We'll talk about that when we come back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And Dan brought up a point as we're talking about this college football playoff, as we're looking at the games coming up this weekend, but got down a deep dive, I guess, if you will, on the college football playoff because the first rankings come out in less than 2 weeks now. And we were talking about how I just feel there's going to be a lot of teams that are left out that can make a case to get in. But Dan called in, and he brought up a point that I want to hit on really quick. He said, with the college football playoff, he said, I'm a fan of it. And he said, it gives you more opportunities for it to be resolved on the field. And I 100% agree with that. That's exactly what it does. It allows you to resolve it on the field. Look at the NFL recently. Look at how many wild card teams. You can make the argument with baseball too. How many wild card teams make a run, get to the championship game, right? You can have it resolved on the field because, to his point, Dan was saying, look, win more games. You don't want to be on the outside looking in, right? Dan says, win your games. And that's the easy argument to make. That's the simple solution. You're absolutely right. But in college football, man, that's hard to do. It's hard. It's difficult, harder than it's ever been. And I'm not making a case that we should give them a break, right? And these guys make a lot of money, coaches and players. So, yeah, simply put, win your games. But listen to this bracket. If the college football season were to have ended this past weekend, here's what your college football playoff would look like. Oregon 1, Georgia 2, Miami 3, and Iowa State 4. These are all in their separate pods, right? Oregon would play the winner of number 8 Tennessee and number 9 LSU. The Vols would host LSU, the Tigers, the Bayou Bengals, would take a trip to Knoxville, Tennessee, and play for a chance to take on Oregon in the Rose Bowl. That's awesome. The Georgia Bulldogs would be waiting in the Sugar Bowl for the winner of 7 Texas and number 10 Clemson. That game taking place in Austin. And again, the winner goes to play Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Miami, hanging around at number 3. They would get the winner of number 6 Ohio State and number 11 BYU. That game taking place at the Shoe in Columbus. Winner of that goes to the Peach Bowl to take on Miami. And number 4 Iowa State awaits the winner of number 5 Penn State and number 12 Boise State. Winner goes to take on the Cyclones in the Fiesta Bowl. Think about a Clemson-Texas matchup, a Tennessee-LSU matchup, a possible rematch of Georgia-Texas, a possible matchup of Ohio State-Miami. That's old school right there. And Oregon and LSU. How awesome would that be? Now, this is all going to change. I mean, I would be willing to bet half of this is different by the end of the college football season, but this is what it would be as of right now. But I want you to think about some of the teams that are on the outside. And again, there are still a lot of games to be played, so take that into consideration here. But think about teams on that list that don't make it to the playoff. Texas A&M at 6-1. Indiana, undefeated. Kansas State, 6-1. Illinois, 6-1. Army Navy undefeated. Alabama 5-2, which talk about, hey, win your games and you're fine. That's the definition of it right there. Notre Dame 6-1. There's a lot of good teams there that wouldn't get in because of the new rules and restrictions of the college football playoff. Pittsburgh undefeated 6-0. They would be on the outside looking in. So the hope is, to what Dan was saying and to my point, and we were in disagreement, but the concept still stands. The hope is that all this gets solved on the field before and during the college football playoff. The hope is that everything plays out the way that it's supposed to, because the results of the games will actually matter. And more results of games, or I guess I should say results of more games, will now matter to the college football playoff. And for college football fans, that's a good thing. That's a great thing. Let me say that again. Results of more college football games will now matter to the college football playoff, which is where we stand right now, which is exciting, which makes all these great matchups this weekend and all the weekends so much more intense. All right, we're talking to Jordan Hill of Dawgs 247 when we come back in one of the best matchups we've seen this season. Georgia took care of the Longhorns in Austin last weekend. We're talking to him about that, plus what the Dawgs do on the bye week. That's coming up next.
Are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and joining us on the phone lines, I think he made it back safely from Austin, Texas, Jordan Hill of Dawgs 247. How was your trip out there, my man?
It was good. Probably a mistake to try to eat my weight in brisket. But other than that, managed to fit into the plane and get back. And no, it was a great time.
Did you, I guess, let me ask you this. Is it all that it's been, that it's praised to be Texas barbecue? Because I told you last week when I was in Dallas for SEC Media Days, we were all there, I didn't get a chance to eat any. So is it as good as advertised?
I thought it was. I had a chance to, honestly, one of my friends from high school lives in Austin, so he kind of sent me to the right spots, and we hit up some really good barbecue. And yeah, I think on the whole, I prefer brisket, and got a lot of brisket while I'm out there. I really enjoyed it.
Well, good. I'm glad you got to make the trip and enjoy your time out there a little bit. And it's always helpful when you can cover a winning team, Jordan. We're still trying to get back on that trail here in Auburn. But Georgia goes on the road to Texas and takes down the number one team in the country 30-15. And for all of us that watched this game and took this game in and have been discussing this game, that score doesn't really tell the story.
No, not at all. I mean, Georgia totally dominated. The defense stole the show. 10 tackles for loss, 7 sacks. I give a lot of credit, and I've been, you know, eating crow this week because I picked Texas because I didn't know if the Georgia defense was up for it. And you know what? They showed they very much were. I mean, that pass rush was fantastic. Jalen Walker had a great game. Mykael Williams, really the first time he's been turned loose since he's been dealing with an ankle injury, going back to the season opener. Even the defensive backs, Dalen Everett was responsible for 2 turnovers. Julio Humphrey had a big game. The defense brought it. Offense still had areas they needed to improve. That was not a very good night from Carson Beck. Had some turnovers, had some mistakes that kind of let Texas hang around. But as we kind of were talking about after the game, obviously things to clean up, but I mean, I'd say if you told Kirby Smart before the game you're going to beat Texas on the road by 15, you say, I'll take it, and we'll clean up what we got to going forward.
Were you, I know you mentioned there about Carson Beck, who goes 23 of 41, 175, three interceptions, but thanks to ETN on the ground, 87 yards and three touchdowns, Georgia's able to walk out of there with a win. Is there still concern with the offense that if they can't take care of the football or try to outscore some of these teams down the backstretch, I mean, is there still concern there with the Georgia offense?
I think there definitely should be, and I think it kind of sits with Carson Beck. And that's what makes me interested to see what he looks like in that Florida game. You know, he's not shied away from the fact that he hasn't felt like he's been 100%. He got banged up back in week three at Kentucky, kind of fell on his shoulder awkwardly toward the end of that game. And I honestly think that's a big piece of the puzzle here. I mean, there was a interception in that Alabama game where he just didn't get enough on a throw. And that was the case again on his very first one in the Texas game. Tried to throw it across the middle to Ben Jurecek and just didn't get enough on it. So I think more than anything, if Carson can kind of settle in that way, maybe really have a chance to rest up during this bye week, I think that would be very valuable for him. Maybe get closer to 100%, you know, try to heal up and get ready for what's going to be a long backstretch of the season.
In the last three games, Carson Beck, five touchdowns, five interceptions. If you add the Alabama game in there, eight touchdowns, eight interceptions. And if you take out the Tennessee Tech game, with add in the Clemson and Kentucky games, he only has two more touchdowns than he does interceptions on the year. So good news is for Georgia, they're 6-1, and they have one of the best wins in college football against Texas. And that win against Clemson, Jordan, starting to look a little better. That one really starts, I think it gets better every single week because Clemson's just quietly getting better.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was one of those games coming out of it, you know, going into week two where you thought, okay, I guess that, you know, Clemson, this might really be over for Dabo and company. And hey, credit to Clemson, credit to Cade Klubnik, who I thought struggled in that game against Georgia. I mean, it looks like it's Clemson or Miami in the ACC, and I do think that'll be a heck of a battle once those two teams play. But no, I mean, Georgia's got a very nice resume on its hand, and I think probably bigger than anything, the fact that Georgia still only has one loss. I mean, I think they can afford one more loss of what they got left and still make the college football playoff. You know, had they lost in Austin, as understandable as that would have been, your back is totally against the wall. I don't know. It would have taken some help to lose three games and still make the playoff, you know, the right combination of losses. So that was big. And yeah, I mean, Georgia, I would be hard-pressed to say there's another team that's in the playoff hunt right now with a better resume than Georgia. There might be some that are comparable, but I think Georgia has a really strong argument to have the best, especially among one-loss teams in the nation.
I want to go back to the defensive side of the football because it was a clinic on Saturday night there in Austin, Texas. Where would you rank that defensive performance from the ones they've had this year? I mean, the one against Auburn was good. The one against Kentucky was good. Clemson obviously was really good. I mean, where do you rank the defensive performance against Texas so far this season through seven games?
I'd put it number one and just ahead of that Clemson game. And I think the biggest thing was, again, you know, I think this is a really talented Texas team, but to go on the road, to play like they did, to just dominate that offensive line, which, you know, their left tackle, I think, is going to be a first-round offensive line pick. They did a great job. They did a very good job. Again, to me, it really started with the pass rush. I mean, some of the plays they made, specifically a couple of the plays Dalen Everett made, he kind of disguised what he was doing, but a big reason why he was able to make such a big impact was that Quinn Ewers didn't have a whole lot of time to make decisions. I mean, I think about the interception Dalen had in the second quarter. He kind of sells that he's going to be in man coverage on a guy, and then he drops into his zone. And Quinn makes a quick decision, and a big part of that is he doesn't have a whole lot more time. So he throws to where he didn't expect Dalen to be, and he intercepts the pass and gives Georgia a short field. And I believe Georgia wound up kicking a field goal before halftime. So, no, I mean, I think this was number one. This was one of the better defensive performances I've seen as I've been on this Georgia beat. I mean, they really answered the bell. I think they deserve a lot of credit because, you know, people like me were really thinking they weren't up for the challenge, that this defense was a peg below some of the ones we've seen the last few years. And you know, they're not perfect, but they showed that they can hang with anybody. And it was a very impressive performance, and one that each of those guys should be really proud of going forward.
He writes for Dogs247.com. Jordan Hill joins us here on the phone lines. He's with us every Wednesday here on ESPN 106.7, talking all things Georgia athletics, football, and basketball primarily. And with the football team, now 6-1, only loss was on the road to Alabama, where we all know Georgia played a much better second half. I still believe they're the better team, especially given what we've seen Alabama in the past couple of weeks. And so now that Georgia's in the bye week, before they get the back half of this schedule, which we're going to talk about in just a second, has Kirby said anything about what their goals are, trying to get healthy, what the mindset is, any news in terms of what Kirby and Georgia are going to be doing during this bye week?
And it's pretty straightforward. I mean, Kirby said that there's a lot of focusing on ourselves, trying to clean up little things at the various positions. And, you know, he said they were going to get after it Tuesday and Wednesday, and then the focus would really turn to Florida on Thursday going forward. So, no, I think they understand that they're still in a good spot. There's things they need to clean up. There's things that need to be improved. Saw improved tackling in that Texas game, but you know, you look at the defense, one of their big issues this year has been tackling. So, I'm sure that's going to be a focus. And then on the other side is just getting healthy. I mean, we talked about Carson Beck not being 100%. They've gone without Tate Ratledge, without Jordan Hall, without Smile Munden, without Branson Robinson, who I think they really, really need Branson back just in terms of their depth at the running back position. So it's a good week to get healthy, to keep working. You know, you never want to tell Kirby Smart that the team has a break this week, because that's definitely not the case. But they're working hard, but they're also going to have a chance to kind of catch their breath before, you know, going down the backstretch of a season where there's still some challenging games. You know, I think a rejuvenated Florida, I still think Georgia's clearly the better team, but the Gators are in a pretty good spot right now. Hosting Tennessee, going to Ole Miss, still some big challenges down the way for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, those final five games, you mentioned Florida neutral site next week, then at Ole Miss, home for Tennessee, UMass, and then Georgia Tech. I mean, personally for me, Jordan, I think that Florida team has gotten better. You said it, though, Georgia's the better team, which, I mean, how much does that really go in college football this year? It seems like the Ole Miss game has taken a slight step back just because of what Ole Miss has shown. And then, man, Tennessee's such a wild card. I don't know what they are. I don't know how good they're going to be, how bad they could be. So Georgia's probably feeling a little bit of the same way.
Probably so, and I would say that Tennessee game would be the one I would be most concerned of if I was one of the Bulldogs. And, you know, again, Tennessee defense has played really well, but they showed a statistic, Jacob, during the first half of that Alabama game. Three straight first halves where Tennessee did not score at all, and that's the first time that had happened since 1963. And there's been some bad Tennessee teams between now and 1963, and even they managed to not do that. So I think Georgia's hitting pretty when it comes to what's left of the schedule. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy, and I don't totally write off that Ole Miss team, but I look at Tennessee as the one with how they've played on defense consistently. And again, kind of going back to the conversation we just had about Georgia's offense, that's the biggest challenge. But it is a big boost for Georgia that game will be in Athens.
We were talking earlier on the show before we brought you on, and it was if the college football playoff had started right now, right? If the season was over, no more games, everything was done, Georgia would be the 2 seed out of the SEC. They'd get that first round bye. They would wait in the Sugar Bowl, Jordan, for Texas and Clemson to play. Winner of that would play the Dogs. So you could have, I mean, I know there's a lot of season left, but the potential of a Georgia-Texas rematch or a Georgia-Clemson rematch, I mean, how magical could that be?
Oh, it'd be fun, and I will be interested. I am pretty convinced that Georgia's going to play Texas a second time, probably going to be in Atlanta for the SEC title game, but it looks like we've got a fun race for this SEC championship game on our hands because of Georgia, Texas, LSU, Texas A&M, those kind of feel like the top teams, along with Tennessee as well. I think it's going to be kind of a fun sprint to try to get to Atlanta. And, you know, it might be advantageous to not make the SEC title game just because you get a one less game to play. But I don't think any of those teams want to hear that. They want to represent the conference in Atlanta. And I think it's going to be a fun race all the way down to the end of the regular season.
Want to touch on Georgia basketball really quickly before we let you get out of here. The season begins for the Dogs on November 4th. They'll have Tennessee Tech stepping into Stegman Coliseum. But they did play in their first exhibition game. Were you guys able to see that and tell us a little bit about the 86-59 win over Charlotte?
So that was actually the same day as the Texas game. So I was out in Austin, but I followed along. A very good performance from Asa Newell, who is sort of the guy we're all watching, you know. 20 points, 9 of 10 from the field, 5 rebounds. Silas Demery Jr. shot really well. Good stuff from Clemson transfer R.J. Godfrey. And we had a chance to go watch practice on Monday. Was really impressed with Asa, with R.J. Godfrey. Silas shot the ball a lot better than I thought he did last year. I think that people should be optimistic about this Georgia team. Now, I say that and say that I think I had Georgia 9th in the SEC, which, you know, isn't anything to – to throw a parade for, but I think that's enough to get back in the NCAA tournament, which is the goal, you know, for everybody who follows this program. So a very productive game at Charlotte. Mike White said they really wanted to give them an early road trip to try to test everybody and make sure they were up to the challenge. They got another exhibition this upcoming Tuesday against UCF. That'll be home. Looking forward to seeing that, seeing this group out in action. And then, as you mentioned, keep the countdown going until November 4th when they host Tennessee Tech.
Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 is with me every Wednesday here on the show, telling us everything we need to know about the Georgia Bulldogs football and basketball programs. Always enjoyed talking to you, my man, and appreciative of your time. Tell people where they can find you, all your coverage, and what's coming up, as I know you're going to be kicking back and taking it easy on this bye week.
Right. Probably watch a little bit more football than I'm used to, Jacob. But dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at dogs247. And, yeah, going through some of the stuff that Kirby had to share on Tuesday, writing about some of the younger guys who have stepped up, Chris Cole, Damon Wilson, taking a look at the red shirt situation for a lot of these true freshmen. And then we'll see what happens in the rest of the SEC. It'll be nice to have a Saturday to kind of check out some of the other games and see how teams are stacking up as we get closer and closer to November.
We appreciate your time, my man. Enjoy the bye week, and we'll have you on again next week previewing Georgia and Florida.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jacob.
Thanks so much. That's Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Check him out. Any Georgia coverage you want or need at Dogs247.com. We'll take our final break, come back, wrap up hour number one. We'll get into hour number two. And remember, Daryl Dapprich, Double D, he's joining us at 3:15 sharp. So if you want to get in on the show, now's your time to do it. You can get in to end hour number one or start hour number two. 334-321-1390, that's the number to get you through to me. We'll wrap up hour number one after this.
I'm Wes Allen, Secretary of State. In Alabama, election integrity is a top priority. We must ensure fair, secure, and transparent elections. To vote in Alabama, state law requires voters to present a valid form of photo identification. For a complete list of acceptable identification, or to learn more about acquiring a free photo voter ID, visit alabamavotes.gov.
This message is presented by Alabama Secretary of State Wes Allen.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joining us as he does every Wednesday. Love getting updates from him in terms of the Georgia Bulldogs as they are coming off what is arguably one of the better wins of college football this past weekend when they took down number one, Texas. As we're wrapping up hour number one, again, Daryl Dapprich will be joining us in hour number two. And got a question in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067, says, is it realistic that an undefeated Army or Navy wins the American and beats out everyone else for the four seed? And I assume that is asking about that four seed in the playoff, and that won't happen because those top four seeds, as far as I am, as long as I am correct on this, it is the Power Four conference champions that get those automatic bids. So as of right now, the projection, right, if it were to have ended today or this weekend, rather, Oregon, Georgia, Miami, and Iowa State, that's why Iowa State's at that four spot, right? That's why they're there, because they will, if it all were to end today, Iowa State would be the so-called Big 12 champion. I don't think anybody in their right mind is saying that Iowa State is the fourth best team in college football. They're good, and they've won their games, but don't think anybody's saying that they are the fourth best team in college football. Now, they are still a top 10 team, but they would be the so-called Big 12 champion. I do think there's a world where Army or Navy could get into the college football playoff with one of those at-larges, right? Whether it be the spot that BYU currently holds out of the Big 12, or whether it be one of those spots that that Boise State holds, right? The Mountain West champion, right? Because they get that spot as well. I mean, I really do think that's a possibility. And just remember, folks, remember that Army and Navy are undefeated overall. Army 7-0, Navy 6-0. And if you look at that schedule, you remember who plays at the very end of the season when nobody else is playing on December 14th. Army and Navy get after it. Think about that for a second. And look, Army has Air Force, North Texas, Notre Dame still on that schedule, and UTSA before Navy comes to town. Navy, on the other hand, as I pull up their schedule, they play Notre Dame this weekend. How about that? Notre Dame this weekend, Rice, South Florida, Tulane, and East Carolina. So, I don't think so. I think there's a really good chance that both of those teams could still be undefeated if they could both get past Notre Dame. I don't think there's any other team on their schedule that can beat them. If they both beat Notre Dame, which, I mean, does anybody know what the heck that team is? I don't. I couldn't tell you. I don't know. They struggled with Miami of Ohio. They then struggled with Louisville. They beat Stanford, who's bad, and they beat Georgia Tech in a game that nobody even knew happened. So, I don't know. The only two ranked teams on Notre Dame's remaining schedule are Navy and Army. It ain't Florida State. It ain't Virginia, and it ain't USC. So, yeah, I think there's a world where Army or Navy could get in. That game could come down to a win and you're in type of situation for the college football playoff. Christian Griffin and I talked about this. That game would break television records. That's America's game. Are you serious? You're going to have every living president that's still walking would be at that game. Be unbelievable. Well, I don't know. Given what month that's in, I don't know. Maybe not. Anyway, hour number one is in the book. Stick around. Short segment in hour number two, plus Daryl Dappert. It's all coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and if you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch it with the podcast. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Got some updates from the Georgia football team and the Georgia football program as they are coming off the win over the number one ranked team in the country, Texas, this past weekend, and Georgia on a bye week this week. So we got some updates from that and how they're feeling over there in Athens, plus a little insight on the basketball team as well. So that was in hour number one. A lot of college football playoff talk in hour number one as well. And I have something I need to be correct, or I need to correct myself on. So we're going to get to that in a second. I was incorrect in something I said, so I want to make sure we get that clear coming up, thanks to some people texting me. So we will get to that in just a second. But all of that was in hour number one. Here in hour number two, we're going to talk for 10 or 12 minutes, and then we're going to get to Daryl Dapridge from Locked On Auburn, who joins us every Wednesday, and have a feeling he has some things to say today as we're talking another Auburn football loss, another disappointing loss, another winnable game that Auburn lost. And so we'll talk to him about this game against Missouri, about Auburn going to Kentucky. Have a chance, or I have a feeling we're going to get to some basketball things as well. So we'll have Daryl coming on in just a little bit. Before we get into content, though, want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour each and every day between 3 and 4 o'clock here on ESPN. Well, the thing I was incorrect on is something that, look, I'll be honest, we're still learning. I'm still learning. And it's something I got confused on, and I knew it was this way, but I spoke incorrectly, and at the time, I guess I didn't know it was this way. And so I remember seeing all this now. There's been so many different conversations on the college football playoff, on who gets those first four, right? The top four seeds, they get the bye. There's a fifth team in there, and then it's the highest ranked team, right? There's been a lot of different conversations had, and so I was incorrect and misspoke in hour number one because there was a question asking, could Army or Navy win out and beat out somebody to get in the top four and get that first round bye? I wrongly said no because I said it was the top four power four champions. That is not correct. That is false. The 12 participating teams will be the five conference champions that are ranked the highest by the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, plus the next seven highest ranked teams. Let me say that again. This is straight from the College Football Playoff, all right? It says the 12 participating teams will be the five conference champions that are ranked the highest by the Selection Committee, plus the next seven highest ranked teams. So it doesn't matter if you're from the MAC, I guess. If you're one of the highest-ranked conference champions, you're in. All right, you're going to be one of the five that get in terms of the conference champions. Now, you can be in those top four seeds, which get that automatic bye. The fifth seed will be the fifth highest-ranked conference champion. Then everybody else will fall in line behind, which is why I said earlier in the first hour that there's going to be some confusion in terms of the rankings compared to the bracket that gets released. And I think Iowa State's a perfect example of that. You look at them right now in the AP poll, because that's all we have to go off of. They're number 10 in the latest top 25. But if the playoff were to have started today, they would be the four seed. So there's a little disparity there, right? So I wanted to clear that up. So yes, Army or Navy could win out, be a conference champion out of the American, and somehow find their way inside that top four if the playoff committee would allow them to. But that's what it all comes back to, is how does the committee, behind closed doors, guidelines or not, how do they rank these teams? And how do they do it to benefit themselves? Sorry, that's just how I feel. So wanted to correct that. But as we move on from that, we're going to transition into what's coming up this weekend. I talked a little bit about the games going on around college football. But Auburn is in Lexington this weekend. Auburn football is in Lexington this weekend as they take on the Kentucky Wildcats. And I'm sure a lot of you have heard what Hugh Freeze had to say on Monday. He doubled down again today in terms of what we can expect to see from this Kentucky team. And I think he's right. When he talks about this is a really, really good defensive team. One of the best in the SEC, and frankly, one of the better teams in the country in terms of defensive efforts, defensive numbers, and defensive performance from Coach Stoops and the Kentucky Wildcats. They're 3-4 this season. They're 1-4 in SEC play, right? They beat Southern Miss to open the year. Remember, they lost to South Carolina 31-6, and everybody was like, oh my gosh, like, what happened to Kentucky? What a terrible loss that was. And then all of a sudden we realized, oh, South Carolina wasn't all that bad. But we did realize that Kentucky's offense is that bad. Because then they hosted the number one team in the country at the time, the Georgia Bulldogs, in a game that they had, I don't know, 7, 8 chances to win. And they couldn't do it. And you walk out of your home stadium with your head down because you lose 13-12. Yikes. You beat Ohio 41-6. Everybody had written Kentucky off. Ah, they're 2-2. Oh, well, who cares? They're bad, right? Good defense, terrible offense. They can't beat anybody. All they did was go and beat the number 6 team in the country at the time in Oxford and beat Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss 20-17. They didn't do it with their offense. They did it with that defense. And we were like, oh, okay, maybe Kentucky's back. Maybe they're for real. Nope. They lost to Vanderbilt 20-13. And again, we're thinking, what a bad loss. Kinda. At that point, we already kinda knew what Vanderbilt was, right? We already kinda knew what Vanderbilt was becoming because they were coming off of a win over Alabama. And that was a Kentucky team, remember, that was ranked, or not ranked, was favored by like 12 or 13 points. And on this show, we just couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. Kentucky was favored by double digits. And Vanderbilt went in and shut that up real quick and got that done in Lexington 20-13. And then the Cats went down to Florida last week. This is what Hugh Freeze was talking about. And says they lose 48-20 and says this was an anomaly. This is an outlier, right? This is not who they are. And if you look at the stats, you have to agree. Outside the South Carolina game, even that wasn't 48 points to Florida. Florida, 48 points. Man, that's the most they've scored all season. And they have Samford on the schedule. They scored more on that Kentucky defense than they scored on the Samford Bulldogs in week 2. This is an outlier. Do not look at this game and think, oh yeah, Auburn's fine, Auburn's got it, which I have a feeling most of you are not doing that. But this Kentucky team is not all that great. Their offense is exactly what you think it is. Average, at best. And Auburn's defense, every single game this year, has played good enough. I've told you that, right? They've played good enough to win games. So as long as they can stick together, and as long as they can play on a string, and as long as they can still show up and put some good effort on the field, Auburn will have another chance to win a game this weekend. But the question becomes, as it has been all season, can Auburn score? Can Auburn move the ball? Can they take care of the ball? And can they score? The three big questions, it seems obvious, right? Some of you are probably saying, well, duh, you could say that about every offense. You're right. But the problem is, we're asking the same questions about Auburn every single week. Every week, it's the same thing. Can they move? Can they keep it? And can they score? And they can't seem to do all three at the same time. They've cleaned up one, they suck at the other. They'll clean up another, then they'll drop another. It doesn't make any sense to me. And so as we get to break, because we're going to get Daryl in here to talk about this Kentucky team, this is not an overwhelming game. This is not a daunting game. This is not a scary matchup. Just look at what Las Vegas has said. Kentucky's favored by 2.5 at home on a Saturday night. These are two bad teams. Auburn's 2-5. Kentucky's 3-4. Combined in the SEC, they're 1-8. It's a bad game, man. Nobody's going to be watching this outside of Auburn and Kentucky. If you're not in Auburn, Alabama, or Lexington, Kentucky, this one's not going to be on your radio or your TV. But it's still an opportunity for Auburn to get a win. Let's get to break because I want to talk to Daryl Daprich about what the heck happened last week, get into this week and this game, and whatever else we could talk about around Auburn athletics. Daryl Daprich from Locked On Auburn joins us next as we're underway here in hour number two.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
It is time. It is time. It's a fan favorite guest here on ESPN 106.7. He joins me every Wednesday from 3:15 to 3:45. You could catch him a couple of times a week on the Locked On Auburn podcast. He does radio hits all across the world. It's Double D, Daryl Daprich, joining us on ESPN. My man, good to hear from you on this Wednesday afternoon.
Hey, what is great. I wish I did it all over the world. It'd be nice if, like, Italy would have me on their radio station. I could try to learn some Italian, my native language. That'd be kind of cool.
You don't know any Italian, Daryl?
I do, but I can't repeat it with you right now that we're talking. It's what I learned as a kid when my grandparents fought, and some of my relatives, some of the made men in the family. Yeah, I can speak some things, but nothing we want to share on a family radio program.
Yeah, I'd prefer to keep my show. I think I'll keep my job today. Well, man, we appreciate you as always, and it's so much fun talking to you. We have so much to talk about today.
Right, we do.
Unfortunately, this is 4 weeks in a row now that we're talking about an Auburn football loss on the radio. And so I know Wednesdays is normally the day that we are beginning to flip the page and look towards the next week, but I do got to get your thoughts on whatever that was that we saw for Auburn against Missouri last Saturday.
Well, I really felt, for whatever reason, strangely confident that Auburn was going to win that football game. I mean, I went out there. I put it out there. I'm not going to be afraid to shy away from my opinions where people can come back and do the old gotcha game and all that stuff. I don't care. I felt like Auburn was winning that game. And I felt like they were going to win the game and that was going to propel them, that it was going to, like, turn the corner for their season and they were going to win three or four more games after that and get bowl eligible. The one thing that game did, I think, I'm just covering the game for certain Auburn media outlets. But, I mean, I'd be lying to you, and I'd be a hypocrite if I was telling you that I'm not pulling for Auburn. I mean, there's a difference between being an unbiased media member that works on ESPN or some of this covering Auburn.
Sure.
So, yeah, I want them to win. I want them to do well. I want there to be joy in Mudville. I want people to be happy when they – you know, watch our show and all that kind of stuff and tune into you. So this one gutted me. And I got the same feeling from a lot of other people that cover Auburn and that Auburn fans, because it was like, okay, if Auburn can't win this one and they can't close in this game, where is the path forward? Where is the light at the end of the tunnel that makes you think? So I am in total show me mode right now. As bad as I want to get optimistic again, and there are things that I've heard and I've seen this week that want to make me optimistic. I feel it. It feels good, you know, but this one kind of made some folks jump off the ship a little bit. And I think it's because it's all too familiar. You're watching something happen again. I still think Hugh Freeze is the guy, but I think his leash is a lot shorter. I think that Auburn did exactly what they did against Oklahoma. They had an 11-point lead going into the fourth quarter. driving to put the game away and add on more. And if Auburn scores a touchdown against Oklahoma or a touchdown against Missouri, when they're up 11 starting that drive in the fourth quarter, Auburn is 4-3 right now, not 2-5. And so that's how important it is. And then they miss field goals at the end of those drives. They drop touchdown passes. They give up a 95-yard touchdown. They are inventing ways to lose, and it makes it difficult to stay. I am not saying that people should abandon fanship and abandon coming to the games and watching the games,
right,
pulling for Auburn. No, you should do it every single Saturday, thick and thin, stick with your team. I'm talking about having the faith and the belief that they're going to win and not find a way to lose the game. Until they find a way and learn how to win and close, I have no faith that they'll do it. When they do it, I'll change my mind. I am in show-me mode right now, and that game flipped that every week except Georgia. I picked Auburn to win.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
And I am now, maybe I'm trying a little reverse juju here. I ain't picking them again to win the rest of the year until they start winning. And if they start winning, then I will.
Yeah.
But if they lose, I'll pick them to lose the next week. I mean, I just don't. I think that there is enough talent there to turn this thing around. But until you do, I'm just in show me mode right now.
Unfortunately, I was there last week, and I picked Missouri to win. Friday on the show, as we were closing it out, I said Auburn is going to play good enough to win. They're going to have it at the end, but it just won't be enough, and Missouri will get it done. And sure enough, and I'm not saying that to brag on me being right. I'm saying that because I was there a week ago, and I think there were a lot of fans and people like you, Daryl, who were holding out, right, giving them hope, giving them the benefit of the doubt, thinking it was going to be corrected, and then another gut-wrenching, heartbreaking loss, and it's like, all right, we're not done with the team, but we're done having hope until they give us something to have hope about.
Let me clarify that. I'm glad you said that, brother. You've just absolutely sparked something. There's nothing wrong with having hope for the future. Hope's not a bad thing, like they say in Shawshank Redemption. There's nothing wrong with showing hope and belief and faith for the future of this program. That doesn't mean you have to show it for the present and the here and now. There's a difference. You can say it's going to be rough next couple of games, but I think it's going to eventually get turned around. I have hope that this is the right guy. I have hope in the fact that look at this recruiting class. I have hope in the way these youngsters are playing. I have hope because these guys are coming out and not jumping ship, not leaving. These recruits are like, we ain't going anywhere. We love Auburn. And you're going, hope because Hugh Freeze comes out in a press conference today or talks about it, says, I'm done. It's over. I'm back to coaching the way I know to coach. I can only coach. I can only be me. The walking on eggshells, worried about if kids are transferring, is over. If a kid doesn't like getting coached hard, he's not for us.
Do you believe that?
That's what Hugh Freeze said today. I do believe it.
Okay.
I believe it, and here's why I believe it. Do you remember, and I hate to give away a future episode of Locked on Auburn, but
uh-oh,
I care about you so much that I'm going to throw a little nug your way.
Wow.
Do you remember after the game against, it might have been Oklahoma, when I kind of went on a mini rant and some people got upset about it because I said, people don't listen to what I said. They hear what they want to hear. I got tired of him getting on Thorne and only Thorne.
Yes.
Remember? And people misconstrued that and said, oh, if you can't get coached up hard, people are so – I didn't say that. I want him to get coached up hard. I just wanted other kids to get coached up hard. And now it makes perfect sense why they didn't. Because a Jeremiah Cobb, a Cam Coleman, anybody else that's going to be here two or three more years, I feel like Freeze did not want a chance losing them. What is the repercussions of Peyton Thorne getting upset and leaving? He's not going anywhere. This is his last year. It's his last year. You don't have to treat him with kid gloves. He's not going anywhere. And if he quit halfway through the year and said, I'm done, you're being too hard on me, is that really that big of a setback at that point with how he was playing? No. The ones that Freeze was worried about upsetting and why I think he didn't treat them equitably and get on their you-know-what were the players, some of these guys, the Riddicks, some of these guys in the future, Sylvester Smith, that he doesn't want to lose because he's got him 3 or 4 more years. I think that's over. I think it's over. I know for a fact that people that he respects very, very much in the world of coaching and outside influences at Auburn, administration, board members, confidants, he shared with them Monday, hey, you know, he's had some conversations. I'm not saying anything that's a secret, that's private. It's out there. He said it today. He had been talking about this for a couple days, and it's like, I'm going to let it rip. I have to be me. So I heard that practice today and yesterday was definitely geared and slanted towards him chewing on some tail and being very, very animated and very intense and very involved.
And if that's the case, you have to start wondering what the results are going to look like if they become different, or even before we start talking about results, Darryl, if the game plan and the execution and just the overall strategy is going to look a little bit different. Because to pull a quote from you from Locked on Auburn, and people can find that wherever they get their podcast, you talked about Cam Coleman. And I think this is a perfect example of this, saying, quote, I don't feel like he's gotten enough touches, enough targets. And so if you're not willing to coach him hard and you're worried about him leaving in that retrospect, why not give him the football and cover your own rear end that way?
Well, and people pushed back on that and got angry and said, why would you and Zach talk about that when it looks like Auburn's not doing a high-level recruit service when if future kids want to get here?
Oh,
no,
gosh.
Kids want to be coached to their potential. And by the way, two things can be true at once, right? Jacob, you know that. Cam Coleman could get more touches, but he could also be a little more efficient with the touches he gets.
Sure.
A.K.A. drops he drops. So I'm not saying that it's all beholden to Auburn to get him more touches. He has done some things that have been less than effective. Peyton Thorne has 2 more interceptions you shouldn't have. Let's be honest. But like I said, two things can be true at once. I mean, get him some touches behind the line of scrimmage. Get him some touches on 3-yard slants, 5-yard hitches. Put the ball in his hand. People don't think he's as fast as he is because of his size. And we got to remember, he barely lost in a race to Ryan Williams. Like 0.1 of a second. It was that close. The dude can fly, okay? So get the ball to him in space, bubble screen, you know, 5-yard slant, hitch, and let him see what he can do. They need to start doing that. You don't have to just run him 50 yards downfield all the time and
right.
think that's the route tree you need to run with him and leave the shorter routes to Robert Lewis and, you know, Sam Jackson and those bubble. I mean, utilize him on those too. That's where I feel like the coaching staff is failing him. Not that, yeah, they've given him some opportunities that he hasn't taken advantage of, too. I get that. But I think that Cam Coleman is one of those guys that probably could benefit from getting coached up a little bit harder. You know, you hear about some of these freshman wide receivers not running the right routes when they're in the game. That's
yeah.
why they're not getting as many touches. Again, I'm not dropping any breaking news. Hugh Freeze said in his press conference last Monday, he doesn't understand why when they look so good in route running in practice, that when the bullets start flying, his exact words, in games, they're cutting off routes 2 yards short, they're not using the right depth, they're not as crisp. Okay, well, I mean, that's if you're teaching them how to do it in practice, and you know they're catching on because they're doing it in practice, that's on them for not doing it in the game, and then that's when you should chew some tail.
There you go. And maybe that'll change with the comments from Hugh Freeze today. Whew, man. Didn't think we'd get so fired up after our fourth loss in a row, Darryl, but I love it. I absolutely
yeah.
love it. And we're going to get to talk about the Kentucky game coming up this weekend as Auburn back on the road. Can they get their first win in SEC play in Lexington this Saturday? We'll talk about that, plus maybe a little basketball as well with Darryl Daprich of Locked on Auburn. He joins me every Wednesday. We got another segment coming up with him after the break.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins, and we're joined by Daryl Daprich. We'll have Locked On Auburn continuing on here as he's with us for 30 minutes every single Wednesday. Daryl, I know you are still on Locked On Auburn a couple of days a week, contributing there. You're on the Barn. You got a whole lot going on, my friend, and you've been very active in the whole Twitter world now with daily Twitter polls. Is that right?
Yeah, I decided to kind of just do something fun and try to give my followers just some kind of neat. It's not all about sports. I did one on, you know, a historical event. If you could travel in time and go back to a historical event, it's fun to kind of get to know your listeners, your readers, your followers. Kind of, they love to interact. Sometimes they'll do like a write-in vote and just comment on the poll. So yeah, I've got one up today. You can only get four choices. So you're always going to leave a couple out, but what, you know, the best football movie that was ever made out there. It was Rudy, R.R. Marshall, Remember the Titans, and Friday Night Lights were the four choices I gave.
Is your answer in there? Because you pulled a fast one on us last week, and your answer wasn't in the Auburn basketball
poll. Yeah, my answer has been in every single one of the three that I've put out there so far.
Okay.
I did baseball movies two nights ago. Yep. I did the historical event, which mine won. I wanted to be in Times Square after World War II was over. Remember the confetti, the sailor kissing the nurse, all that good stuff. But my football movie's Rudy. Look, it's got to have a goosebump factor. And all four of those movies have moments or scenes that give you goosebumps. So I know the funny ones like Longest Yard and The Program and all these others, Little Giants. How could you do it without putting Little Giants? I'm like, you serious? That went straight to VHS, bro. I mean, I don't know what people – but, Rudy for me just – and then Remember the Titans. We Are Marshall's another one. I mean, those are like my three on Mount Rushmore. Those are the holy trinity of football movies.
Yeah, so. Remember the Titans is there for me in football. And then I actually commented on your baseball poll because you went old school on the baseball movies, but I went with one that I said my generation would hopefully relate to a little bit more, The Rookie with Dennis Quaid. That is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, it was tough to leave that one off. Now, here's why I did leave it off, because it's not fiction. It was true.
True.
So I chose fictional, you know, The Natural, Field of Dreams, sure. Sandlot. And I can't remember the other one I had. But I chose fictional movies because, you know, I wanted it to be about the story and fiction and all that and magic and just do it something, you know, kind of make-believe, imagination. So that's why. But The Rookie, if there was one that was a true story or an autobiography, it would be that one. And then tomorrow's is going to be kind of interesting. It's going to have to do with the Mount Rushmore effect of Auburn athletics, and I'll just leave it at that. But yeah. I think it will be hard to choose one of the four options. I'm doing that on purpose.
One of our listeners texted into our On the Line text box and says that Rudy was offsides, Daryl.
He was offsides, absolutely, and that takes away the whole wonderful special moment. You know, just getting in the game on kickoff coverage. I mean, the 12th man has been doing that for years with Texas A&M.
Yeah.
What makes that movie is him getting the sack.
Yes.
And, you know, the dad reacting and getting carried off the field and all that. So, he was offsides like a lot of Notre Dame defensive linemen are. And then there was I think Manti Te'o's girlfriend was the linebacker behind him, right? You don't see her on screen.
She's just not there.
She was there.
Yeah, she was there, but not really there.
12 men on the field, and that's why they didn't throw the flags. They couldn't see her.
Yeah, same effect. Same effect. Yeah. Well, you get that and a whole lot more if you follow Daryl on X or Twitter, DAPP6410. So make sure you do that. You can catch my Locked On Auburn, the podcast, a couple of times a week as well. And as we shift, Daryl, into the game coming up this weekend for Auburn, four-game losing streak. They have not won a Power 5, Power 4 game yet this year. And they have another opportunity. They have Kentucky this weekend on the road. And before you came on, I was talking about the comments from Hugh Freeze about this Kentucky team saying their last performance against Florida was an outlier. How you cannot look at that defensive performance and think that everything's going to be okay, because that's a really, really good Kentucky defense.
I agree. Kentucky's defense is decidedly better than Missouri's. They are extremely salty against the run. If Auburn thinks they're going to go and run for 150 or 120, they're not. And so they better be able to throw it effectively. And literally, Peyton Thorne's going to have to win you the ball game. I can't see a scenario where Auburn, even Jarquez Hunter, goes off. Now, you've still got to run it to keep them honest. You still have to run it 25, 30 times. Maybe you use Peyton Thorne in a little trickeration and use his leg some. But it's going to be hard to get 100, 110 yards on the ground against Kentucky's defense. Their defensive line is stout. You can throw it on them. They're ranked third overall in the conference in defense, and I think they're like second overall in rush defense. So, you know, if you they're giving up like 190 in the air, you've got to try to exceed that. And Peyton Thorne's going to have a really, really good game, get into the 230, 240, I think. Mm. But the good thing about that is Kentucky's offense is not very good either. It's kind of anemic. And I know there's some people, again, you know, I talked about Brock Vandegrift and how he's a pocket passer and, you know, he's not a dual threat. And Auburn has struggled with dual threats. And people said, well, you're wrong. He can run. He's athletic. Look, being athletic and being a dual threat quarterback, two different things. He averages 1.9 rushes on the ground. He's been sacked 15 times. He's a sitting duck a lot of times back there. This is the kind of, I mean, if Auburn sacked Brady Cook five times and the other cat that came in the game from Missouri, you know, you got to be careful. But I think Auburn can contain Kentucky. Kentucky's offense is nothing like Missouri. This is a game that I can see both teams scoring in the teens.
In the teens.
I mean, absolutely. Oh. I see this as an old school slobber knocker, 17-14, 17-13 game.
Man, can the fans take another game like that? Oh, that I mean.
Oh, it's going to be close. I mean, listen, yeah. If you're an Auburn fan, I'm telling you right now, you know, start early Saturday morning because it's going to be close. By 9:30 at night, you're going to be a nervous wreck.
Man.
And so, you know, can Auburn hold on? You know, I'm saying no. I'm saying Auburn loses 17-13.
Reverse juju.
But, you know, if I'm wrong, I will be glad to be wrong because I've been wrong all year in my prediction. So why not be wrong to the benefit and betterment of Auburn?
That's like, yeah, it's like people that are into sports betting. They bet against their team. So that way, if their team wins, they pay for it.
Yeah, I did that not in betting because I don't bet, but I did that when I was in fifth grade. The Steelers were in the Super Bowl against the Cowboys. And I bet a guy that was a big Steelers fan that I knew, we were friends, I bet him $10 that the Cowboys would win and the Steelers would lose. And I looked at that as a win-win scenario because I was glad to go to my dad and mom on Sunday night and go, I need $10. And they're like, what for? And I'm like, I made a bet. Of course, I learned to never do that again. But, I mean, would any of us pay money to see our favorite team win? Absolutely. And if the Steelers were going to lose, by God, I was going to benefit. I was going to get something out of it to make me feel better.
There you go. So it's been happening. It's not a new concept, ladies and gentlemen. Daryl Dappert knows what's up. And so you look at what Las Vegas says in this game, Auburn and Kentucky. Again, talking with Daryl Dappert from Locked On Auburn, Montgomery radio legend. Kentucky favored by 2.5 points and pretty spot on with what you said in terms of the total points. I mean, they're looking at 42.5. I mean, just not a whole lot of scoring in this type of game. And I know Hugh Freeze has the comments today about, you know, I'm going to coach them harder and going back to my roots and we're gonna be a different team, yada, yada, yada. But Daryl, I have some serious concern with the defense, and not in terms of can they perform, it's are they willing to perform another game? Because Auburn's offense is going to struggle again because of Kentucky's defense. Are we worried about this Auburn defense just flat out giving up and saying, man, I'm tired of defending a team that can't score?
Not if you play the Young Bucks, and that's going to be the difference. When you've got Caleb Harris, Jay Crawford, Sylvester Smith, Malik Blockton, DeMarcus Riddick, some of these young guys, they're not going to. They're trying to get more snaps and they're trying to make a name for themselves, and that's why you've got to infuse some of this young talent. I think Auburn giving up a 95-yard 18 play drive was just gassed. They had stopped Missouri two consecutive possessions. They had given Auburn the ball back on one of those possessions in pretty good shape to go down and at least, you know, that's the drive that Thorne overthrew Rivaldo Fairweather on 3rd and 6, and he'd still be running.
He'd
be running by your window
open
right now as we speak.
Yep.
That not only does that get a first down, he may go all the way. There was nobody It's at least good for 30 yards. And so I think that the defense was just gassed. That's where I think the defense will not be gassed, because I can't see Kentucky being on the field for that many plays. I can't see Kentucky putting together a long, sustained drive. I think you're going to see a lot of three and outs by both teams, a lot of back and forth. It's going to, you know, the punters, they're going to be the ones. They're going to be gassed. They're going to have to be icing those legs.
Say it ain't
so. Field goal kickers. What's a big story? McPherson should be back to kick from 35 in.
Yep.
This Saturday, 35 yards in. So, yeah, I mean, could Auburn finally get a turnover that leads to a touchdown? That'd be nice if they could get a pick six or a strip sack fumble and take it in. If they do that, then their offense doesn't have to score but 13. And you could still, whoever gets to 20 wins this game. I mean, I just think if you can get into the 20s, you're winning. So that's why I predicted 17-13. But I just, look, it's on the road. Kentucky looked horrible against Florida, but this is the same Kentucky team that beat Ole Miss that Auburn has not beat anybody at the conference. Hasn't beat a Power 5 or an SEC opponent. So Kentucky should have a little bit more confidence and playing at home. I think that'll be the difference. I hope I'm wrong, but I think that'll be the difference.
Remaining schedule for Auburn: at Kentucky, home versus Vanderbilt, which for now is a top 25 team. They've got Texas this weekend.
That's a joke, by the way. Can I just say that? That's an absolute joke.
Here we go. Get them.
I mean,
get
look, em. Here's the deal. Vanderbilt's a great story. I get it. Everyone's in love with Pavia and Beck and
get
Hill and Clarkley. I get that. They lost to Georgia State. They lost to Missouri, who looks mid. And they almost lost to Ball State last week. Don't tell me they're not getting a little bit of a bump and a little bit of love because they're a feel-good story. They are not a top 25 team. They have two losses and should have three, and could have lost, like I said, to Ball State. Great story, bowl eligible, yes, but not, they're not one of the top 25 teams in the country. Absolutely no way. That's a joke.
What if they beat Texas this weekend, Darryl?
Oh, then they go to the top 15, and then I move into the top 15.
Yeah, you hear that, Vanderbilt? You are not good, according to Darryl Dappert. You are not top 25 worthy.
I didn't say good. They're not good. They're good. They're just not top 25
That's fair.
Worthy.
That's
think.
Fair. That's yeah. fair. Yeah. So Auburn has at Kentucky, home versus Vanderbilt, home versus ULM, home versus Texas A&M, which, again, who knows what that team is, and then on the road at Alabama. I mean, Darryl, we're running out of games for Auburn to get one this season.
If they get one and they finish and they get that feeling and they learn how to win, then anything's possible the rest of the year. I mean, let's be honest. This is the year, if you get it, that there are some cracks in the armor of the Alabama Crimson Tide playing them in Bryant-Denny. Of course, the way Auburn's luck is, they have to suck this year too. If Auburn was like a team that was eight on pace for 8-4, man, that game in Bryant-Denny is very, very winnable.
Yeah.
But Auburn hasn't shown that they can do anything. I mean, there's cracks in the armor for Alabama, and Auburn's not going to be able to take advantage of it because they're not playing well. But if they do win that game against Kentucky and look good doing it, and then they win at home against Vanderbilt, then they take care of business against La Monroe, now you're cooking. Now you're going, okay, we got to win one of the last two to go to a bowl. And at least there's a trajectory of upwards, of a trend of upwards. They got it turned around, right? People are like, well, where do you see anything that would make you think that they will? I don't, until I see it for the first time. To this point, no. But there's always the first time. There's always that time. I hadn't seen it yet, but that doesn't mean that you won't see it.
Who's the best team in the SEC, Darryl? Right now.
That's a great question. I would have to go still with Texas. I think Texas losing to Georgia. I mean, yeah, Georgia beat Texas, but Georgia lost to Alabama, who's lost 2 of 3 since then. It's Texas A&M laying in the weeds, but they have one loss. I mean, you've got a bunch of one-loss teams in Georgia, Texas A&M, and Texas. Out of those three, I would still say Texas by a hair.
Don't forget LSU, Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee, they're right. They're one-loss teams, too. I think that they, I don't know, Tennessee just doesn't seem to have the same feel as a Georgia or Texas to me right now. Actually, Tennessee might be better than A&M, though, so that's a great point. And LSU, we'll see. You're going to start seeing the wheat sifted over the next couple of weeks, and you're going to start seeing it get down to about 3 or 2, as it should be when you get into the, you know, SEC championship game. But yeah, Tennessee and LSU have one loss too. Their teams just seem different to me. They just feel different than the other three that I mentioned.
Man, I always look forward to this, and I always have so much fun with Daryl, with you on the show each and every Wednesday. You're so gracious with your time, and you're just so, you're so entertaining. You're so real, and that's why we bring you on this show each and every week. Tell the people where they can find you, how they can keep up with you, and all the different facets that you're a part of now, and tell the people where you are.
Sure. You can catch me on Wednesdays and Fridays on Locked On Auburn, where you get your podcast, and on YouTube with Zach Blackerby. We also do a reaction show that drops Sunday morning when Auburn's on the road. I do go live with him immediately after the game. I don't do that when Auburn's at home because I'm covering that. And then Monday mornings with Ben Taylor at 7:10. I'm on 8 a.m. on WNSP and Mobile at 8 a.m. on Mondays, with you on Wednesdays. And then I write some stuff for The Barn, thebarnauburn.com. I do a little DAP recap article. I'll be doing some basketball here pretty soon, season previews, that kind of thing, but I do them after the football game.
The DAP recap. Did you come up with that?
I did.
That's so good.
I did.
That's so good.
DAP recap.
I'm so proud of you. Daryl Dapridge, Locked On Auburn, and all the other facets, man. Check him out on social media as well, on Twitter, DAPP6410. Have a great rest of your week, man. I really do appreciate you.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you.
Daryl Dapridge, check him out. He is with us every single Wednesday here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it all up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Daryl Dapridge joining us as he does every single Wednesday. And I say this every week, and it's so hard not to say it. He is one of the best people you're ever going to meet. I mean, he's so kind and generous and funny and smart and is just so entertaining. I mean, Daryl is one of the blessings that I've been able to meet and come across in this business so far. And he's done a lot for me, man. There's no doubt about that. So always grateful for his time. And he really is a fan favorite, man. He was fired up. I didn't know I was going to trigger something when I brought up Vanderbilt. I didn't know he was going to get mad about that. But that's so funny that he had some hot takes on that. And talking about Auburn football as well and the SEC and things. And so a lot of fun with Daryl. Also had Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 back in hour number one. He joined us talking all things Georgia football, got a little insight on Georgia basketball as well. And so then had a lot of college football playoff conversation today. Also started looking ahead to Auburn and Kentucky this weekend, and I started to give a little bit of my thoughts on that, which we will do a lot more tomorrow. And speaking of tomorrow's show, Thursdays are crazy busy around here. We will have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network will join us at 2:30 tomorrow. Auburn High School's head football coach Keith Etheridge will join me tomorrow at 3 o'clock as they get ready for the season finale against Dothan, the number one team in the state, the new region champions. That's right, Auburn High School, after winning against Carver last week, region champs. They await their playoff matchup in round one. We'll have Coach Etheridge with us tomorrow, and then Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC will be with us in hour two. So three wonderful guests back to back on Thursdays, and then coming up on Friday, we'll have the Free For All Friday edition of the show with Uncle T-Bone in here. Christian Griffin is in here. Christian and I are both at home this week, so that's nice. He's home for Lee Scott. I'm home for Auburn High, so looking forward to that. We'll have a lot of fun on Friday, and then our coverage for Saturday on the Auburn Sports Network for Auburn football on Wings 94.3. Everything will get started Saturday at 2 o'clock. All right, game day on Wings 94.3 with Jumpin' Jack Hutton, Uncle T-Bone. They will go on the air at 2, and then the Auburn Sports Network will go on at 4, with the game time being a little different. It's a 6:55 kick. Everything, it's just weird. It's a non-traditional time. I think it comes on TV at like 6:45 or something like that. But our coverage on Wings. Everything starts at 2 o'clock with game day on Wings, rolls into the Tiger Tailgate Show. That'll be at 4, and then kickoff is set for 6:55 between Auburn and Kentucky Saturday night in Lexington. You can catch the entire radio broadcast on Wings 94.3. And speaking of games and things that you can get excited for, I mentioned this yesterday when Lindsey Crosby was in here, but here on ESPN 106.7, you could catch the entire World Series. That's right, the Fall Classic right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Game one on Friday with the Yankees and the Dodgers live from L.A. You can catch that all right here on ESPN 106.7. That coverage begins after the drive on Friday. So I believe they're on location Friday. I have to double check on that. But I believe they're on location. And then we're going to have the World Series game one all the way through at least game four and game seven if necessary. So looking forward to that here on ESPN as well. Again, want to shout out the Orthopedic Clinic for sponsoring our number two each and every day here during my show on ESPN 106.7. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. The drive's coming up. I see Bill out there. I see Jason Caldwell out there, and I see a legend out there. I see Coach Don Dunn. He's going to be in the studio today as well for the drive, so stick around. They're coming up 4 to 6 on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. I am back tomorrow. All right, jam-packed show again. Brad Law, Coach Etheridge, Chris Gordy. Gosh, does it get better than that? I don't think so. We'll have that for you tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.